Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, race fans, to another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. About to put the host, Chris Yelikoff, and Black Creighton here in the studio in just 1 second. I'm your co-host, or actually his co-host, Mr. CJ Sports. I want to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, Paige Stockdale of It Works, I-95 Sports Network, Baja Radio for helping make all this possible. Make sure you guys check us out at 110 Nation on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here on the 110 Nation. Don't forget tomorrow night, right here on the 110 Nation Radio, 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. That's 8 o'clock. Looking forward to another great show with Mike behind the mic and Shorty producing it. So make sure you guys check that out. But go ahead and get your host in here and get this show rolling. So Chris, how you doing tonight?
Hey there, Mr. CJ Sports. And all you race fans, how the hell are you? Looking for another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. Of course, we always take this time to remember Steve Billmeyer. And the reason we always want to remember him is because, unfortunately, he did pass away. Unfortunate circumstances led to that happening, and we're just keeping the show going to always be a memorial of memory of our great friend, Mr. Steve Billmeyer. Otherwise, I call him my crew chief. But Jason, Mr. CJ Sports, I tell you, it's silly season in NASCAR. We're going to jump on into things. Man, I tell you what, a lot of hot topics come out last weekend. We had Jimmy Johnson winning that controversial restart, so we'll talk about restarts tonight. And what's your opinion?
I said, what was so controversial about it? I'm still scratching my head why it's so controversial.
Well, you know, it's one of those deals where you kind of stuck in between the old way we used to do it and the new way we do it. And it kind of reminds me of that Bush commercial where it's the, you know, NASCAR reminds me a lot of that undecided person. You know, have you seen the commercial where he goes, Bush? And he says, what are you known for? And he says, I'm undecisive. And so that so much reminds me of the way NASCAR is right now. And I agree with Junior, of course, not just because I'm a Junior fan, but because I think that he had a good point there. What is that? Clippers or something? Anyway, so, yeah, you know, I understand the restart line at not the restart line, but what would be the finish line if a caution comes out. The overtime line. I think at Talladega and Daytona, the overtime line is exactly good for what it's used for. But in a short track like Dover, you just kind of feel like there was something left on the table there. And for Kyle Larson, who, you know, definitely earned the spot, him having a bad jump, just kind of goes back to my thinking that, hey, you know, he's getting beat by those Hendrick Chevrolets. And I just want to argue my point that I think Kyle Larson could still wind up at Hendrick Motorsports before it's all said and done. I know that we've argued that a lot, and I'm not going to get back into that. But once again, I mean, Larson got to see firsthand what he's missing by not being at a superstar company like Hendrick Motorsports, of course. I do believe that Larson knows how to make restarts. I think that that car is missing something. He doesn't have as much takeoff. I've seen Jimmy Johnson over the years, Mr. CJ Sports. You can agree or disagree. I've watched Jimmy. He's probably one of the best restarters in the game. Jimmy very rarely misses a restart. He very rarely spins the tires. Of course, he was just perfect this past weekend, and that's why he won. You know, I've been a Jimmy Johnson critic for a long time. I'm not going to sit here and put on a Jimmy Johnson shirt or hat. But I'll tell you what, there's a reason why he's won as many races as he had, and And, you know, when we discussed the topic of, well, he doesn't even really have a nickname. And I guess it's just because CJ Sports, he's come in and he's won so much from the beginning that we've never, you know, had enough time to find out who he really is other than just the champ. I mean, who, you know, maybe we should put out a poll question, you know, or something, you know, like Jimmy the Champ Johnson. You know, does that sound like a fitting nickname for him? Because whether you like him or hate him, the guy is obviously very gifted as a driver. He works for one of the best motorsports teams in the entire motorsports world. He's got a crew chief that's a genius, checking house and all the you know, we could say that, you know, Jimmy has 83 wins. Chad Knaus has, what, about 79 of them? You know? So, Knaus, of course, come from Evernham. And Evernham is now a Hall of Fame crew chief owner. So, Chad definitely has learned from the best in the business and has carried that on to a phenomenal career. And you know, Kyle Larson had a great race. Martin Truex Jr. had a great race. Both of those guys come up a little short there when it mattered. So I'm interested in what you just said. You didn't think that it was a controversial restart, huh, Mr. CJ Sports? Please, carry on with that.
Well, I don't feel it was. They made it to the overtime line. Jimmy Johnson was out in the lead. I mean, it was simple as that. Regardless if you like the overtime line rule or not, that's what the rule is. It was put in place because people like Kevin Harvick that intentionally wrecked the field to freeze the field up and the race be over with, or have multiple restarts.
Hold that thought real quick. Have we turned into a crybaby nation, even in sports? Is it that we're always looking for that certain thing to pound the sport for? Because you know as well as I do, there was plenty to say after the race. And I, for myself, thought it was a great race. I don't like finishing under the yellow. But as you said, why are we arguing it? It's the freaking rules. It's what the rules are. So I like your point there. Maybe we are turning into too much of a crybaby society, and it's exposed itself even in racing. Go ahead.
I agree that Jimmy Johnson does a great job at restarting. There's a reason why he's a seven-time champion, 183 or 84 races, whatever it is. I don't feel that it was the car, and I disagree with that part. I think Chip Ganassi Racing puts out one of the best machines out there. You got two guys in the top 10. So I'm not going to agree with that. Yes, Hendrick might be top two team, but I don't think Ganassi's too far behind at this point. I think simply Johnson beat him at the restart, and that's what it came down to. I don't think it was the 48 Chevrolet was better than the 42 Chevrolet. It was a Hendrick Motorsport better than Ganassi. I think Kyle Larson just got beat on the restart. He had the chance to start on the outside. He started on the inside. Jimmy Johnson got him. And the caution came out. See, if anybody wants to blame anything, quit blaming NASCAR. Quit blaming Jimmy Johnson. Blame that stupid non-driving driver out there in the 13 car, also known as Ty Dillon. He's the one that caused the caution anyway. That's the only reason.
I mean, I got to go Stephen A. Smith on this. This is absolutely ridiculous. Dude, what? Ty Dillon
was
running in the
top 10. That's the only reason
it was
even a caution.
It was the old tires, I believe.
Okay.
It was the old tires. I'll leave it with that. It's just, you know, we put a Dillon boy on the pedestal 2 weeks ago. Now we're knocking him right off. Once again, we're probably talking about a competitive advantage here. But since you wanted to throw your boy Ty Dillon up underneath the bus, I hope that he invested in some of that Geico insurance, because that was a pretty nasty spill there at the end.
Yes, it was. But I didn't have a problem with and we talked about this Monday night. Shannon came on the show as well. I don't have a problem. Yeah, all of us would love every race to finish under green. It just can't happen. It's not going to happen. And I don't expect NASCAR to make an infinite amount, even though they don't make it to the restart line. or the overtime line, that, yes, there's supposed to be infinite amount of restarts until they finally hit that overtime line. I don't expect NASCAR to do it. These are the best of the best. If you can't get it after two or three restarts, and I feel that it's a done deal anyway. If these guys can't go three laps without wrecking each other, because that's what it was, the green-white checkered, so it was the three-lap shootouts, all it was. If you can't manage to do three laps, then, okay, then NASCAR, go ahead and just finish the race. If these guys are the best of the best, you can't do three laps. It is what it is. I don't have a problem with how it finished. I don't have a problem with Jimmy Johnson winning. I felt that regardless what happened the rest of the race, he won it on that restart, and, you know, that's how it, that's, you know, we didn't knock Chris Buescher for winning on a rain shortened race. We didn't knock Eric Amarillo a couple years ago in a rain shortened race. We didn't wreck Austin Dillon for fuel mileage. So I'm not going to knock Jimmy Johnson for winning on a restart. It was a great race, and I hate, we talked about this Monday night, I hate going on social media after we have a race like this, because for NASCAR fans to be as passionate about their sport and want it to grow, there's a lot of hate in when it comes to NASCAR fans and social media. And like Shannon brought up, how do you expect this sport to grow, and how do you expect to gain more fans when you have a first-time fan go to a race and hear the longtime fans talk garbage about the sport and talk about, oh, Kyle Larson should have won the race, NASCAR is out to make Jimmy Johnson an 8-time champion and everything else? Or how do you expect the sport to grow when you have new fans go on social media and you leave a comment, you get cussed out and ambushed and jumped on social media? NASCAR fans, you guys got to take this into consideration. This sport is not going to continue to grow if every time you turn around, a new fan gets bashed or it's looking crazy, like, because he enjoyed what he saw, but because your driver didn't win or you didn't like the particular driver that won, you go to talking garbage about NASCAR. How do you expect that new fan to be a loyal fan and want to return when you, being a longtime fan, just tore up NASCAR, a new one, and talk to complete garbage about it?
Yeah, I think that this is something that's been going on since 2011, since the introduction of Twitter to NASCAR. I think that, never did I think that they could put so much dishonor in 140 characters, but it's definitely dishonoring to our sport. It happens from the top of the league to the bottom. Promoters work their tail off to only miss a call, a human error, or the wrong driver wins, or whatever it may be, a technical call made in the tech shed, and the backlash is just unmeasurable. It's disheartening. It's at times vulgar. And it's definitely something that has been a Pandora's box with the introduction of social media. Social media has really given the sport a lot of highlight, but, you know, as one theory may be said, or one fact is, every positive reaction, there's equal negative reaction to it. And it seems to be that's the state that the sport of NASCAR is in. And I don't think most of these people that get on there, either one, they really don't believe what they're saying, or two, I guess it just goes back to, I guess they're just beefed up about it, you know. Passionate people in the sport are great, but at times their opinions can be way off. I won't say what, there's a background noise there, like some typing or something. I'm not sure what really comes on to the NASCAR radio show on the weekday, because I don't listen to it myself. But a lot of complaints that I get from the localized radio, the satellite radio, is that it's the same thing. The callers call in about the same problems, and it's most of the time about Kyle Busch or NASCAR's not doing this right. And as you said, I mean, somebody might be getting satellite radio for the very first time, and I've always wanted to, you know, feel connected to the sport, and the first thing they turn on is a bunch of crybaby and about Kyle Busch dropping a microphone. I think that, you know, overreaction is definitely a problem in the sport. But there, at the same time, you don't want to take away the one tool that we have that gets us a little bit closer to the driver.
I want to back up a second. What did you say about dropping the mic?
Well, you know how everybody just got all upset over it, dude. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it.
Okay.
They were on
the same page then, because I didn't see nothing wrong with
yeah.
it either. Sorry, but if my favorite wow. driver, which Kyle Busch is top two in my book, I'm a Danica fan of Kyle Busch. If my driver is not passionate and my driver is not upset because he should have won the race, and regardless of how he lost the race, I want him to be upset. I want him to show that he is aggravated or upset that he lost. And so I have no problem with Kyle Busch acting the way he did. As a matter of fact, I enjoyed Matt Kenseth doing the drop mic the following week, trying to kind of mock. I think it's going to be the Joe Gibbs thing for the rest of this year with mic dropping. But I have no problem with that. And all those out there that had a problem with it, this, that, and the other, that's why you are a junior fan, and that's why you don't have a championship to sit there and talk about. There's a reason
I don't know
why
if
Kyle
that's
Busch,
correct, what you're saying. I mean, you're stabbing a junior fan, but you know I'm a junior fan, and I just completely agreed, probably completely flipped you out by the fact that I agree. I agree. I've been called a Kyle Busch sympathizer this week. I've been called a KB lover. You know, and they're not talking about Kyle Busch. Okay?
No problem with it. And I'm not trying to take an off at the Dale Jr. fans, but Jr. does not show emotion. He does not get upset like that, and there's a reason why he's not a champion. There's a reason why, and I like telling this story all the time. When I went to elementary school, my stepdad did not read the sports. He liked NASCAR somewhat, and that was the extent of his sport. And so he got the newspaper for all the rest of the sections. So I got the sports section every morning. And when I was in elementary school, this is before the Atlanta Braves got to be really good. This is the days before David Justice and John Smoltz and Greg Maddux and Steve Avery, I don't know if I said that name already, all those great players that they brought onto that team, and they made that run for the longest time. I would open the paper and intentionally see the Atlanta Braves with 100 losses per year, like how horrible they were. Now, do you think if they would have been they would have been happy and they would have been didn't get upset that they would have ever turned that organization around? No. They eventually got tired of losing. They got frustrated. They got emotional. And they fixed their problem. And same thing with Kyle Busch. There's no doubt in my mind Kyle Busch will be a champion again. He won't be just a one-time champion. And I like the passion. I like everything drivers do. No. And do sometimes I kind of shake my head at Kyle Busch? Yeah, sometimes he goes a little extreme. But I like to know that there's a fire inside of him and that he wants to win and he is not settling. He fits that motto from Talladega Night perfectly. If you ain't first, you're last, you know. So I like that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of what I said about Jimmy Johnson. What's happened over the years is certain drivers prove their existence and the reason why they've made it to the top level of racing, whether you like them or not. Jeff Gordon, Darrell Waltrip, Dale Jarrett, you know, I don't know who didn't like Dale Jarrett, but I'm sure there's somebody out there that didn't like him. All these guys have struggled and worked their arse off to get up to where they are. And when you have drivers like Jimmy Johnson and Kyle Busch, of course they're the villains to some of us, but there's also that respect that they're hell of drivers. And
you know what I didn't
doubt,
like about you know what I didn't like about Dale Jarrett?
What's that?
He never drove the damn brown truck. That still pisses me off that he never brought the brown truck out there and turned laps. And imagine the brown truck being out there at Bristol. Come on. No, I'm just playing. Dale Jarrett's great. I always used to love the brown truck commercials and Dale Jarrett.
Oh, God.
So I
definitely. Would have loved to have seen that at Talladega, Dale, Jared, if you're listening. I tell you what, that would have been something. So Jeffrey Earnhardt, since we were talking about Earnhardt a minute ago, Jeffrey Earnhardt signs a pretty good deal with Hulu.
Hulu.
And Circle S Racing. Now, first of all, when you investigate into the Hulu contract, what we're finding out is traditional cable companies are on the DL, and networks like Netflix, Amazon TV, Hulu, Sling. As a matter of fact, I do believe that you're an actual subscriber to one of these that I've mentioned here. They're all kind of on the rise up. This could be a deal with Jeffrey that could definitely elevate the type of equipment that he can get into. I definitely don't believe that Circle S is where he's going to be with that kind of backing, especially if they're willing to kind of give Jeffrey a jump start in his career. Are we looking too much into this, being that he's just an Earnhardt?
I've always questioned why he's not given more opportunities. I don't know if the extent of his background and how good he actually is. It just really has always been weird to me that there's an Earnhardt out there that nobody ever talks about. Nobody's really put
it. Kind of treated like the redheaded stepchild of the sport.
It's crazy to me to know this. So, I don't know. I guess depending on the amount of money Hulu is spending, I mean, even though they're the main sponsor, it also depends on how much they're going to, you know, the quality of the team is how much that sponsor's got to pay. You know, sponsoring, you know, if Mountain Dew would sponsor someone like Jeffrey Earnhardt, for example, it's not going to cost as much for them to be the main sponsor and sponsor that car for so many races than if it would be Dale Jr. or Jimmy Johnson or so forth and so forth. To me, it depends on how much they really got out of Hulu. Depends on how much of an upgrade he can really go. I'm not an Earnhardt fan, period, by any stretch of the imagination on any of them. I don't care for any Earnhardt. It's just who I am. But I would like to see him have an opportunity. Maybe not be thrown into the best organization because he's an Earnhardt, but given an opportunity in an organization to see what he can do.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing if maybe Richard Childress actually gives him a hand here. I know Circle S and Richard Childress have worked together in the past, and so I'm beginning to see that maybe Earnhardt, the third generation, I guess he would be the fourth generation. I see him finally getting maybe a chance to compete. I know that he's been around since 2010 when he made his debut in the truck series, so he's definitely not been awarded a decent ride, but has gone through the ranks in the last 7 years to get the opportunity he has now. I did want to bring up a quick point. You had said that you didn't think that there was any disparity between the Hendrick Chevrolets and the Ganassi. And so I did a real quick reference check on that. And can you believe that both Kyle Larson and Jamie McMurray are ahead of Jimmy Johnson right now in the points?
I can believe it. I'm not going to say that Chip Ganassi at this point is the same level as Hendrick. I still think Hendrick is top two, like I said. But that restart, I don't think it had anything to do with Ganassi product versus Hendrick. I think it had to do on that restart, Jimmy Johnson versus Kyle Larson. But if Hendrick Motorsports is still a better organization than Ganassi, it's not by much. They have definitely stepped up everything, to include the drivers that have stepped up their game. And I have a lot of respect for Ganassi, Kyle Larson, Jamie McMurray. I've always liked Jamie Mack. I always felt that Jamie Mack was a driver that just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's never really caused wrecks. He's not a careless driver. He actually takes very good care of his his equipment. It just always seemed that pit stops were bad or qualifying was bad or something, and he would be around cars he shouldn't been around and would get involved in their stuff. But to reference your comment earlier, no, Kyle Larson does not leave a shit Ganassi race. But anyway, when we talked about Kyle Busch,
I beg to differ, but I would rather sit here and show you down the road than to argue about it, because I don't want to kill the anticipation. There's going to be a time and a place again later on down the road that we're really going to be able to amp this argument up. I think that it's still a little bit too early, which opens up the very, very next topic, and that's Danica Patrick. Danica Patrick and Stuart Haas Racing may be coming to an agreement to, well, maybe a disagreement. I do see some doors parting way for maybe Danica to be released at the end of the year. Now, coming off of her best finish in 2 years, that's kind of, I guess it's when you look at all the performance in the past and you look at where she is now and her age and all, you kind of got to wonder, when are those checks going to keep on being written? And, you know, it's unfortunate that she's not been able to be more successful than what she has. But before we retire, I do want to say that she's had a very successful career, being the driver that she's been. And one thing Harvick said years ago, Patrick will never be as good as what Harvick is, because she's not driven a stock car her whole life. Harvick has driven a stock car, but given the talent, Danica Patrick has earned her way to be where she is, and I can see the door opening quickly for there to be a driver change at the Stuart Haas Racing and a seat being vacant by Danica Patrick. Also, over at the Hendrick camp, Casey Kane is looking to be in sponsor trouble. That's something that's not too unheard of in NASCAR. I believe that Great Clips has announced that they're stepping away, and Farmers Insurance is stepping away. Casey's always been a chick magnet to sponsors. Casey's been well represented in the marketing world. I think that the pressure of being in Hendrick and not winning has put a damper in his confidence. I don't see Casey Kane leaving the sport. I've heard some rumors of him going to IndyCar along with Danica Patrick, being that he has open wheel experience, but more in the dirt world and in sprint cars. I still find it highly unlikely that Kane would leave the sport, even if he's dropped by Hendrick Motorsports. Just a little silly season. I project Kane to go back to Ford after he's released, and either with Jack Roush or possibly a second Richard Petty team, depending on where Richard Petty sits right now in the manufacturing field. And I think that if he wound up at Richard Petty Motorsports in a second car, or even the 43, it would give Richard Petty Motorsports, of course, RPM, an upgrade in the driver. But I still think that renting your equipment and not being properly funded is never going to win you a championship. So Casey Kane's days of contending for a championship are probably getting short, which leads us to the next thing. Since we're talking about championships, we've got three drivers right now that are sitting outside the top 15 that have wins. If I'm not mistaken, Austin Dillon is the first one. I didn't write these down, so help me out real quick. Austin Dillon is one of them. Who's the other two? Ricky Stenhouse, and there's a third one there that I'm trying to think of. Who was that third driver? Let me look at it real quick. Anyway, so those three spots are taken up in the top 16, and Ryan Blaney's sitting there at 13th in points. After, you know, such a great season that he's having, did you expect Blaney to be maybe racing for a top 10 spot and to make it into the championship, based off of we still got some road course and another plate race thrown in the mix?
After watching him last year, no, I'm not really surprised. I can see him being in the top 16 point-wise and making the chase without having a win. I would honestly be surprised if he doesn't put it in victory lane this year. Just like I'm not surprised the rumors that I've seen that Penske wants Ryan Blaney to pilot a third car over Penske. I think Ryan Blaney has gained a lot of respect from a lot of drivers. He's a good, solid driver, doesn't make too many mistakes, takes care of his equipment. And like I said, I would be surprised if he doesn't win a race this year. I would be even more surprised if he doesn't make the playoffs this year. We've seen a lot in his rookie year, and things are, you know, he's not had a sophomore year slump. He picked up right where he left off. And so, no, I'm not surprised by what I've seen out of Ryan Blaney so far this year.
Well, and that's, you know, going for broke, you definitely feel that he'll get him a win and lock himself in. To just kind of give people an update on the points and the reason why Blaney sitting in 13th is a situation, it's because Ricky Stenhouse, Ryan Newman, and Kurt Busch are actually the 14th, 15th, and 16th spots in the top 16 lockdown. So if one of those guys falls off, he's automatically locked in. Those guys are automatically locked in based off of they have a win in the Sprint Cup Series. But, I mean,
so
in the Monster Cup Series.
When technically right now, isn't Ryan Blaney actually on the outside looking in? Because if you slide Austin Dillon up there and put him in the top 16, Ryan Blaney's the lowest guy without a win. You got Stenhouse 14th, Ryan Newman 15th, Kurt Busch 16th, all with wins. Now you throw Austin Dillon, who's got a win, into that top 16. So wouldn't Ryan Blaney actually be on
the outside? Yeah,
Ryan Blaney
is actually on. Yeah, see, you're exactly right. And good eye on that. I was trying to put that together real quick. And yes, as a matter of fact, he is on the outside looking in because of the way that it's lined up. Stenhouse will be locked in because he's 14th. Newman gets locked in because he's 15th. Kurt Busch is locked in because he's 16th, but the one that we're talking about with Austin Dillon, he's in 21st position. He would automatically take that 16th spot, and everybody else would move up one. So Ryan Blaney would fall four spots to outside the chase after a brilliant and awesome first half of the season. It definitely puts things in perspective with the way that the points are. And I'll be honest with you, CJ Sports, it only gets harder after that. You've got Junior sitting in the 22nd spot. You've got A.J. Allmendinger, who could be a threat at one of the
road
races. Right. He's sitting in 28th. So if Paul Menard, who, you know, is definitely due. I mean, he's had one win. Maybe he could get another. Casey Kane's had some strong runs. Eric Jones, I mean, Daniel Suarez, any of these guys are capable of winning, and they are right now outside of the top 16. So Blaney's really going to have to pick up the pace if he wants to make sure that he's secured in. And could this be the time that we see Blaney gamble?
We get down to the last, I don't know, five races before the playoffs, maybe. Right now, I wouldn't steer, you know, I wouldn't go off course the game plan, because what they're doing right now is, you know, he's gotten three stage wins, he's got three playoff points. They're very consistent. It wouldn't have been, you know, a freak win by Stenhouse or a freak win by Ryan Newman or even Austin Dillon, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. You know, I have more confidence in Ryan Blaney maintaining and staying in the top 16 than Clint Boyer at this point hanging on. So, like I said, I honestly believe Ryan Blaney will find himself in victory lane before this year's over. So I'm not super sweating it. And right now I would stick with the game plan and go. I wouldn't start hitting the panic button until we get to about five races before the playoff.
got such an interesting point there, and I want to bring light to it to the fans. Basically, what we're telling you is the 9th through the 13th spot, all of you guys are in jeopardy. If you're 14th, 15th, or 16th and you've got to win, you're lucky, baby. And if you're in the top 30 and you got to win, you're even luckier, baby, because you're secure. You stay in the top 30, you're making it to the playoffs. The guys who are in trouble right now are the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th place points guys, because the door is still open for another new winner to step up and get them a cup win. Some of the guys that have not got a win that's already locked in the chase, Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin, of course, Kyle Busch, Jamie McMurray. So these guys have not locked themselves into the chase via a win, but they're looking good statistically. Matt Kenseth is in that 12th spot. Joey Logano in the 11th spot. Joey does have a win. Clint Bowyer in the 10th spot. And Denny Hamlin in that 9th spot. Chase Elliott's in the 8th spot.
I didn't even throw Chase Elliott in this conversation. I'm not saying he's got a sophomore slump going on, but they've had some bad luck as of recently. And you know, all it takes is four winners, and he's on the outside looking in as well. And you named a handful of drivers that, you know, are due for a win or can easily win. I completely agree. Eric Jones can win one. Suarez can pull one off. Casey Kane can pull one off. Junior can win one. Paul Menard can win one. The likelihood of Chris Buescher pulling another one off is slim to none, but I'm not going to say he can't do it. He did it last year.
Right.
So there's a lot of drivers out there still that don't have a win that, you know, they find themselves in victory lane and you're on the outside looking in. I'm waiting for the year that we have at least 16 drivers win in the first 26 races or even more than 26 races. I want to see that happen because I'm dying to see those that, well, it's not going to be so much now because the stage racing and you got the stage points, the playoff points. So drivers aren't just testing things out and preparing for the playoffs. But for those that say win Daytona and are not stressing the wins as much because they feel that they're locked in and watch them have to change their game plan towards the end of the regular season because there were 16, 17 drivers to win, I would love to see that once just to see things get shooken up a little bit.
Yeah, I think if you got up to about 11 different winners, you would see some worried faces around the garage based off the win you're in theory. Because like we said, you could have a great year, be sitting 9th or 10th at points, and six guys who are, you know, not really at the best of their talents but have gotten lucky, seven guys, eight guys, now all of a sudden a half of your playoff has been off of one-time winners. And so now you've got just a few spots left open for some pretty heavy hitters to try to get in there. Like we said, you know, that what this win you're in situation does is it creates once a guy wins, he's pretty much confident that he's going to make the chase. But as you said, given the scenario where we had 16 different winners, go number 17 coming into the 26th race of the season. You know what I mean? Because then somebody would probably lose a spot, and that whole win in your end theory would be out the window. Are you sure that we would want to see that as a fan, to see a guy who's consistent, say Chase Elliott, in that 8th spot? He's been consistent. He has had a little bit of a sophomore jinx. His numbers are a little off. But consistently enough, he was able to stay within that top 10 in the points. How would you feel to see him exit it and somebody like a Paul Menard gets the shot at a championship, knowing that he really doesn't have a shot in hell to win the championship?
I know what you're getting at. I don't necessarily believe. I agree with, you know, you win, you're in. I just want to see it happen just because I want to see all these drivers and teams sweat here at the end, because they've no longer are locked in, and there's a possibility they'll get bumped. That's the only reason I don't want it to happen. playoff point.
You're describing the panic room theory, and I get it, and I definitely would invite the opportunity to see that happen as well, just because it would draw a lot of drama coming into the last two races of the year.
Now, 2 points I want to make real quick, and then we'll talk about these playoff points, but that intrigues me right there. The Danica situation, I think going into the season, I think they all had a good idea that this might be the last year. I think Danica, with her yoga stuff, her clothing line, everything that she's been doing, I think she's been preparing herself for life after racing, and I think she's got to a point where racing is really not that big of a deal to her anymore. I think the other stuff is where her passion is now, and I would be surprised if they don't go their separate way, that Danica doesn't call it a career after this season. Do I want to see her retire? No, but I would be surprised, and I wouldn't blame her. I also think that the mother side of her and possibly wanting to have children before got probably also, you know, that ticking clock inside and everything else. So I wouldn't be surprised. Casey Kane, one, if you would have said Dodge coming back and Kyle and Richard Petty Motorsports going to Dodge, I would have liked that whole scenario since he really started kicking off his career over there with Dodge and Ray Abraham. I know he's been doing a lot of stuff on his dirt track stuff. I wouldn't be surprised that at some point he does walk away, even this year, after this year, and focus on Casey Kane racing. I wouldn't be surprised with that as well. I think his passion has changed, and he is more focused on what he has going on versus what's going on the track. But the playoff points.
So you think Casey Kane? You think Casey Kane is stepping away from racing, similar to Carl Edwards?
I don't know if this year. I think that it's in the transition. I think Casey Kane has gotten to his point. He's older in age. He's seen the injuries, and he has a successful dirt track organization going on. And I wouldn't be surprised if after this season, or even next season, he walks away from NASCAR and continues doing what he's doing on the dirt track side and his sprint cars and running his organization over there. I think this whole NASCAR thing was kind of a way to fund and get everything in, all the ducks in line, that way when he walks away from racing, he was still part of racing, but on the ownership side of the house, is what I honestly
right.
believe. Playoff
right.
point.
Hold on one quick before we go to the segment win. I want to make a brief comment about Casey Kane and Richard Petty Motorsports have had relationships together beforehand. What we're talking about is when Everingham Motorsports sold out, part of the transition went to Richard Petty Motorsports. And so Casey Kane was technically a driver of RPM in the transition time. Now, of course, after the end of the year, Casey Kane stepped out of that Ford and got into a Chevrolet. Am I right? Yeah, it was Chevrolet. Over at Hendrick Motorsports. So only did it for a brief moment did Casey Kane drive for Richard Petty Motorsports, but it was at the end of the Everingham era. He was still in the number 9 Budweiser car.
With the playoff points, this intrigues me. You got Martin Truex with 18 points. Now, the most you can accumulate in a race is 7 playoff points. So, if I'm looking at this right, all it takes is Truex to get 3 more points, and he's already a lock to be automatically into the second round. Am I catching this right? Is that how that works?
You know, I think that's something we're all just kind of the wait and see game. But you know, I think that obviously Furniture Row Racing has found a playbook that's going to lead them into the second round of the playoffs. Just like you said, I mean, you're basically getting up a half of a race in points right from the word go with all that they've accumulated. I just don't think NASCAR foreseen one certain team focusing on that stage points. Do they expect it to be any different than this? I do believe they did, CJ Sports. I think that this is a crew chief strategy, and Cole Brennan is knocking it out the ballpark. What do you say about it? I mean, you're the one that brought it up. I want to hear it.
It's interesting to me because I want to see how many points you can accumulate this year, like Mark Truex, to see pretty much how many rounds they actually get to be locked in. Because if I'm looking at this right, the playoff points carry you all the way to Homestead, and you can only accumulate 7 playoff points per race. So if you have 22 points, in my book, that means the first round doesn't mean diddly squat. You're automatically going to the second round. Obviously, you're going to try to win the stages and the stage point or the races because you want those more points to help you carry into the third round. But Jimmy Johnson's got 15, Kozlowski's got 12. Those three guys double-digit figures on stage points or playoff points. That part is what I've been looking at because I want to know how many points driver can accumulate. How far can you actually advance yourself in the playoffs ahead of schedule? And if there was one thing that I would wish they would tweak, and I honestly think this would help make the racing even more exciting, is I believe, and we've only had one driver so far do it, that was Martin Truex, sweep the race. And in other words, win stage one, win stage two, and win the race. I wish that they would give bonus points for that. I wish that, you know, instead of you winning 7 points, maybe you get 8 playoff points. Or instead of the 10, 10, and then 40 points, instead of getting 60 points to go towards getting into the playoffs, maybe you get 75 points or something. I wish that they would give a bonus for that because I think if you give these drivers a little bit more of an incentive to win all the stages, I think the racing would get more intense, especially leading to the end of each of these stages.
Yeah, definitely a good theory there. It's not the rule. It's definitely something that NASCAR could look into. I don't really see it as much significance. I think that being in position to be able to win these stage points is critical. We're really going to see the beneficiary at the end of the season. But my question is, obviously I don't believe that these points will lock into the second round other than getting the driver there. I think that they'll have to accumulate more playoff points while they're in their rounds to transfer to the next open round, the next available round, round three.
The way the rule is, the playoff points carry with you until you get to Homestead. So if say that Truex doesn't get any more playoff points, those 18 playoff points will carry him, be with him all the way until he gets to Homestead, then they're wide clear. So obviously they're going to continue trying in the playoffs to accumulate more points. But the way I read the rule book is those playoff points,
that's giving him first seed. I mean, that's basically guaranteeing him first seed through all of the playoffs, and you're kind of crowning him the champion before he even gets there.
Well, I mean, this is only getting him through the first round. This is why it's critical. That's why I think if you add a bonus for winning all three stages, I think the racing would be even more intense because I think these playoff points are more critical than people realize.
Yeah, I can see where that could open up a new scenario. I'll get confirmation on this, what we're talking about, before the show next week because, as you said, I think that this is something that's kind of being ignored a lot because maybe people don't understand exactly how it's going to roll out. But there again, I don't think anybody expected one driver to come out and technically dominate these stage points. I mean, that 78 is one.
Eight stages.
I'd want to see his exact statistics. You know, he's won more. I know he's won 7 stages.
He's won eight stages. He's got 2 race wins and 8 stage wins.
Wow. Definitely, Truex is solidified himself to be the one to reckon with come Homestead, especially if these points transfer for the top seed every single, because, you know, basically they're supposed to be seeded by how they won and who's got in by the points, you know. Technically, if you had a good points run, you could make it all the way to Homestead. I think basically if you're given playoff points now, you're knocking that guy out from being able to make the race, the Homestead chase for the championship without a win. It definitely seems that the importance is going to be on winning. And that's something that, once again, we've asked for as fans, and NASCAR's given it to us. So I did want to make a quick note. The trucks are racing in Texas this weekend. Chase Briscoe was fastest in second practice today. Of course, that race will come on tomorrow night.
Chase Briscoe?
Yeah.
So he managed to keep all four wheels on the car, on the truck this time?
Yeah. Hopefully that Ford F-150 will keep all four tires on the ground and bring home BK Racing, Brad Keselowski Racing, BKR. It's first victory of the season. 28 trucks on that entry list.
Huh? I feel bad for Ben Rhodes. It was another race that Ben Rhodes should have won. During pits, Chase Briscoe pits, and they don't tighten on the lug nuts. The tire falls off, causes a caution, causes Ben Rhodes to be a lap down, has to work his way all the way back up to the top four, finish the race. But it was another race that he was out front dominating, and something else out of his control happened. We've had Ben Rhodes on the show, on the One Finishes Four show, and Miss Lee's had a chance while she was at Mid-Ohio to sit down with them and do an interview. Would really like to see him in victory lane. But I'm glad you brought up the Chase Briscoe. Them and Kyle Busch, crew chief gets 4-race suspension, tire changer and tire carrier all get 4-race suspensions for the lug nut issue. I'm not one to question NASCAR and their penalties, but it just seems like a lot of people, a lot of races got suspended for some lug nuts. Is it that extreme? Is the penalty fitting, or the what word am I looking for here? Does the punishment fit the penalty, or was that a little bit
much?
I just thought
it was a lot. Yes, the crime is safety in this situation. The reason why NASCAR is being such a hard ass on this certain situation is because safety is involved. One of these tires comes off down pit lane and hits another crewman. He gets knocked into a race car. One of those tires flies off and jumps over the catch fence and lands on a fan. It's definitely NASCAR pushing the safety issue. I, for one, am supporting NASCAR and all of their suspensions, even if it's one of my drivers, even if it's one of my crew chiefs. I think that NASCAR is sick and tired of the gray area, and they're pushing back. I've been around crew chiefs and drivers and team owners, and they'll be talking about somebody's front end or somebody's rear end on the other team, and whatever it is that they're talking about on that team, do the opposite on their car, and you're going to find where they're cheating at. And it's been a lot of this, Ford's cheating this and Ford's cheating that, and then Chevy's steadily doing their thing, too, along with Toyota. Cheating's just part of racing. So the penalties on the laser, I support. And the penalties of the situation with the tire coming off, I don't think that maybe here is where the crew chief should be suspended. I think that that's not in the crew chief's hands. If the tire changer misses the lug nuts, it's definitely not something a crew chief would probably tell his team to do. So I'm kind of questioning that behalf of suspending the crew chief, but definitely the tire changer. Look, it's perfection or death. And this is one of those situations where NASCAR understands the safety behind it. And if you tell the guys you don't have to get all your lug nuts on the wheels, this is a competitive sport, you'll have somebody coming out there and putting not only their driver but everybody else in the race at the racetrack in pretty bad situation and pretty bad position. So I support NASCAR with that move. And yeah, of course. But any time that you have these guys getting suspended, what you are creating is an opportunity for somebody else. So even when a college basketball coach gets thrown out, or a manager, Major League Baseball manager, argues the ump and gets thrown out, somebody else is getting the opportunity to run those lineup cards or to coach the players. And that opportunity leads into a career for these guys. So, hey, I'm all for it. Let's have five different crew chiefs this year for Kyle Busch, and maybe two of those will wind up competing for Knauss and Cole Brennan's job down the road. Eventually, teams will stop cheating if they know that they're not going to get their win. Look at Joey Logano. He's sitting sixth in points, but his win doesn't count. So he's another guy that at this point in time has to race his way in because his point doesn't count. Do you think that Joey Logano wants his crew chief cheating?
The only thing that's going to happen is these teams are just going to find a better way to cheat, try to find a way to get undetected cheat. And if NASCAR was really that concerned about them cheating, they would not allow them to do the burnouts that they do after they win, because we know what's really going on. But
really going on. It's not a golden horseshoe that they're trying to knock off that car, I promise you.
That's just like GEDs. Just Major League Baseball, PDs, all the things that happened is players just got a little bit more slick with it and found PDs that were harder to be detected, just the same way with cheating. Teams and drivers are still going to cheat. They're just going to make it harder for NASCAR to catch them.
I agree. There will always be some form of pushing the rules. But, as I said before, if it has to do with safety concerns, I back NASCAR 150%. When it comes to the lasers and all that, I'm backing them because I want NASCAR to get down to the level to make sure that these cars are as competitive, equally competitive as possible. Eventually, we'll figure out a way to pass a car, even if it goes to push the pass button. But we'll have that argument, of course, on another show. Not today. There's not enough time. I did want to say that Timothy Peters got him a job with MBM Motorsports, number 99 in the Truck Series team. So be pulling for Timothy Peters this weekend. He had 192 consecutive racing streak come to an end last week. And so really excited to get Timothy Peters back in a truck. I hope that it's competitive. Really looking forward to seeing these trucks at Texas as they are the support class to the Indy Racing League this week. But guys, just like clockwork, we're about out of time here. We do have one of the biggest factory stock races that's ever happened in the Southeast, happening right up at Jackson Motor Speedway this weekend on Saturday night. But at our house of Hook, the house of Hook here in Wynot Motorsports Park, Wynot, Mississippi, we're going to have the Mississippi State's Super Late Models, Mississippi State Championship Challenge Series Super Late Models invading the house of Hook. 800 horsepower, ground stomping, ground pounding, high speed horsepower. We want to make sure that you guys come on out there. $20 grandstand tickets, $35 for the pits. Y'all come on and bring a car full. I want to thank 110 Nation for giving us this opportunity, Snafu Seasoning for being a longtime sponsor of this show, and a shout out to all you gearheads out there. If you listen, make sure you comment on the links. We can have some interaction with you. Mr. CJ Sports, you got anything to close it out here, bud?
I just want to make sure that you guys check us out on Twitter at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check us out at www.110nationsports.com for all the latest. Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Hot Laps with Stats. Make sure you guys tune in. Dylan Stewart, who won the iFlip 300, a 300-lap asphalt race at Riverhead, is going to be on the show tomorrow night. So make sure you guys check that out. Fit for Life, Hey, Stockdale Event Works, I-95 Sports Network, Mile High Radio. Got to thank them for making all this possible. And of course, got to thank you, Chris, for doing the show.
Oh, yeah, it's always fun as usual. And we'll keep up with what's going on this week and have another show again next Thursday night. Well, thank y'all for listening in to Racing with Big Sweat. Always, you can catch us here at 9 Eastern Time on Thursday nights. We do appreciate y'all listening and hope to see y'all back with us again next week. You can find us on Facebook at Yellow Caution Flag or on Twitter at Flag of Caution. Give us a like if you listen in. Tell us about how much you like the show. We want to thank you guys for listening once again. It is 9 o'clock at Central Time. We'll pass it on to the next guys. Thank y'all for listening. And Mr. CJ Sports, have a great week, sir.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.